Welcome to HR Insights, the podcast. Topical discussions with and for our global HR community.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Stuart Elliott, CEO of Elliott Scott, and welcome to the second episode in our special three-part COVID-19 podcast on leadership. Essentially, what dynamics do we see succeeding in tricky times? As our resident expert, I am fortunate enough to be joined by Susanna Yule from YSE New York. Good morning, Susanna.
Hey, Stuart, how are you?
I'm very well. How is COVID over there at the moment in New York?
New York is actually not as bad as it's been, but other states on the West Coast are now in the position that New York was in a month ago. So overall in the US, it's not looking great, but New York is not as bad as it was. So it's a constantly changing beast, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed it gets better soon. I really hope so. But I also know we've got a lot to get through today, so I want to get us moving on quite quickly. So, Susanna, how are the challenges leaders are facing different now than they were before?
So there's a few things. So leaders are being bombarded with a lot of advice from experts and media outlets on what leaders need to do. But leaders are telling us that they are struggling with figuring out how to do it. So there's a lot of information on the what, not as much on the how. We're also seeing leaders being pulled down. They're not looking up and ahead enough. So they're being pulled into operational matters that they wouldn't normally get involved in, limiting their ability to look ahead and plan for the future. So that's sometimes due to the simple fact that they've had to initially focus on crisis management issues that have taken their attention away from other things, sometimes due to their teams being less productive, sometimes due to them wanting to show their people they're in the trenches with them. But the risk in all of this is that leaders are responding to the immediate challenges and not always having enough space and time to plan for the future and focus on what they can do to ensure an uptick in the business as the economy recovers.
I can absolutely resonate with that, Susanna. I have to say that's one of the things that I Jeff, definitely struggle with you. Because at the moment, actually, you can't see an end to this in some respects either. So you're constantly feeling like you're in crisis management mode.
Actually, as a slight tangent, there was an interesting piece of research on the London Underground that showed that the single best improvement in passenger satisfaction per pound spent came not when they added extra trains, nor when they changed the frequency of the trains, but when they put digital display boards on the platform. So you can see how long it's going to be until the train will arrive. It turns out that waiting 7 minutes for a train with a countdown clock was less frustrating than waiting 4 minutes, but being in the dark about how long you might be waiting for. And if people know how long they're going to be in a situation for, it reduces their stress and frustration enormously. And it's similar to the dynamic that's playing out here. People have no idea how long the current situation is going to go on for, and it feels, and in many ways it is, very much outside our control.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I've never heard that on the London Underground, actually. So in terms of dips in productivity, what are you seeing in the dips in productivity out there in the market?
I think there's a few different types or categories of dips in productivity. So people are in lockdown, have shifted to home working, some for the first time. You know, a lot of leaders are seeing, you know, nearly half of their people working reduced hours, juggling childcare, sometimes looking after elderly, sometimes looking after the sick. So people are distracted during their work hours or simply feeling anxious and therefore less productive. And not able to bring their A game. There's a significant psychological burden to the pandemic that we can sometimes underestimate. And then as companies look to the return to work plan or return to office plan, should I say, you know, in the same way as people aren't fully productive on their first day back from holiday, there's likely to be some dips in productivity shifting to the new normal when lockdowns are lifted, especially given all of the necessary regulations we're going to need to keep ourselves safe. The dip is, that dip is important as past recoveries show that there can be a real advantage in terms of how fast businesses accelerate to full productivity. But I think even just, thinking about how you manage people going into the lift, et cetera, it's going to take a chunk out of time out of people's days. The other thing
It's huge. Even waiting for the lift, and you look at every building around the world, it all has that same problem where everybody turns up at 8:30 and waits for the lift.
Completely, yeah. The other thing that we're seeing is, you know, that will be, that puts an additional strain on productivity is ensuring fairness in year-end performance reviews. So many people are already worrying about it, and if businesses don't get it right, I think they're likely to experience a dip in morale and in productivity as we come out the other side of this. One of the things I think a lot of is front of mind for a lot of leaders is that how they manage their people, how they lead their people through this current situation will determine their retention of talent 6 to 12 months from now, or whenever the market picks up, because people will remember how they were treated and how they were led through this current situation, and particularly because it's an emotional time. So people remember that even more.
Yeah, I think that's really important, actually. I think a lot of people, interestingly, a lot of recent surveys, Susanna, a lot of people are saying that their companies are actually sort of navigating this well. It's actually the governments that they feel aren't navigating it well, if that makes sense.
Definitely. I think this is a time where leaders are tested and trust is built or broken.
Yeah, and I'd like to think that trust is being built at the moment. You'd like to think that that's what's happening with employers, but I think no one knows at the moment. That's the real problem. And to your point, 6 to 12 months time, it's that crystal ball that we all want to have at the minute.
Definitely. And I think there's also, you know, people are in some cases showing less initiative right now, partly because their bosses are being more directive and less empowering with them because of the crisis situation, and partially because there's a very real sense of feeling like a victim in the current crisis. And there's so much that is unknown that it's easy to assume that everything's outside of our control rather than trying to control or influence the things that are within our control. The other thing we're seeing is just that leaders are facing is just there's far more tensions they have to manage, you know, balancing the needs to make the decisions that are right for right now, that protect the well-being of their people, that enabled them to continue to run their businesses successfully, but also that set them up for the success in the future, particularly hard when the future is so uncertain. So there's a lot of tensions that leaders are trying to navigate right now.
Yeah, and I find a lot of that, Susanna, depends on the day how you wake up. One day you wake up really positive, and the next day you're very negative about things. It really just depends sometimes on the mood that you're in.
Totally.
Yeah. So on that, so what are the leadership qualities that are most important right now?
Yeah, great question. So I think there's a piece about authenticity. So it's about showing up consistently for people, showing empathy, humility, of course, integrity, you know, making sure that your words and actions align, putting the company's interest above your own. The thing I would say about authenticity is that we often see what I sometimes refer to as overplayed authenticity. So we see some people hearing and reading about the importance of authenticity. So they think, oh, I am who I am. I need to be authentic. I'm going to be myself. And they just expect other people to meet them where they are. And whilst their intentions might be good, you know, they're neglecting the parallel need to adapt their audience or work on their development areas. So it's really important to make sure that authenticity is skilled authenticity, not just showing up in an unfiltered way, because that can have quite a detrimental impact, even though they might be trying to do the right thing. It's like with a lot of work we do in conscious inclusion with our clients, we often help leaders to think about being positive with their intent but curious about their impact, where what we can see a lot of cases is that people think, well, I've got positive intent and that's enough and I'm going to go through the world with that positive intent, but actually if you're not curious about your impact, then it's, you know, other people's perceptions of their reality. So it's important to always be tuning into what impact are you having with other people.
Sorry, I was going to say, I love that phrase, skilled authenticity. I've not heard that before.
Yeah, I think it's because there was this big movement around authentic leadership. And I think there was a shadow side that was created off the back of that, that people are now kind of reverting back to. It's a little bit like strengths-based leadership development. People, you know, in terms of positive psychology and strengths-based leadership, will focus a lot on, you know, they'll think, actually, I should just focus on my strengths and that's the best way to think about shaping my own leadership. And that is true, but it's much more yes and, rather than doing that exclusively and just forgetting about your development areas, because otherwise you may be really strong at the things you're strong at, but you may leave a wake of destruction in your path. So it's a bit of a, you know, it's not about just working on your development areas either. It's, you know, I think the best approach is, probably sounds a bit boring, it's kind of a bit of both, but actually it's about combining both working on your development areas and playing to your strengths.
So the leadership qualities, going back to the question, so showing authenticity is clearly the first one. What other sort of qualities are important right now, Susanna?
Yeah, I think given what I was saying about the, you know, all of the tensions that they have to manage, you know, getting the business up and running when, you know, when the economy picks up, but also looking after their people, I think there's something about courage right now and being able to make the tough choices, deal with difficult issues, leaning into those challenges and making those difficult trade-offs. I think there's also a need for objective judgment. So an accurate assessment of the threat facing the organisation and its people is critically important. So I think that requires a combination of healthy pessimism without catastrophizing, you know, without seeing, you know, the world as being over. You know, it's really about, you know, seeing the risks for what they are and treating them with the seriousness that they carry, but not blowing them out of proportion. And also not falling into the trap of overconfidence or arrogance. So we saw, you know, a lot of that in the GFC, you know, that sense of, you know, people weren't challenging upwards, people weren't getting different perspectives on their ways of doing things. So it can be problematic for people to think they've got the answers, and it can also be problematic to have leaders who are highly intuitive or relying on their instinct and or relying on what has worked in the past. We don't have a blueprint for this situation, so we can't pull out old formulas, and that's one of the hardest things is that we, you know, we need to, you know, chart the course that hasn't been charted before. And leaders are also needing to make quick decisions that take into account the needs of many stakeholders that are often competing with each other. And I think the other thing I would say is adaptability is crucial. You know, so openness, flexibility. You need to be able, leaders need to be able to say when they've got it wrong. They need to try new approaches and not feel like they've got it all worked out and be quick to course correct when the environment changes.
Interesting. So I suppose there's four things there, aren't there? So the showing authenticity was the first point, being courageous, the second one, objective judgment, the third, and then the final one there was that the adaptability that you mentioned as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So if we are looking to the future, what will differentiate the companies that come out of the other side of this, and what will differentiate them in terms of they're going to be thriving throughout all of this?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, most of our clients have been busy trying to survive and put in place continuity plans to carry on as normally as possible during the lockdown period. But, you know, an increasing number of them, particularly in, you know, we've got clients across all industries, so some are being impacted very differently to others. But increasing number of our clients are starting to look ahead, starting to think about what do we need to do now to prepare for the next chapter. And actually, to help them answer that question, we partnered with IND Business School and looked at some previous crises and recovery periods. We looked at events that go back over 100 years, including, you know, the catastrophic, more acute events like 9/11 or Hurricane Katrina, and then more prolonged events such as the Spanish flu in 1918 or the Great Depression of 1930s, right up to the 2008-2009 GFC. And we discovered three things. Firstly, there's a small group of businesses that are clear winners in recovery periods. While, you know, around one in six firms effectively collapsed, around three quarters struggle but survive. There's about 9 or 10% that seem to thrive and significantly outperform competitors by more than 10% in sales and profit growth.
Wow. So they really are winners and losers in this.
Absolutely. And what's interesting is that the, you know, how businesses act in recovery periods is more important in determining which businesses are part of that 9 or 10% that thrive so how they act in recovery periods is more important in determining their future than the pre-crisis performance or structural factors such as business size or age. So there's a belief that size matters, that bigger firms are more resilient and more sustainable in a crisis. But it's not true. And looking back at what's happened in the past, small firms are not necessarily more vulnerable than larger firms.
So if we look at that, Susanna, so what are then the sort of business behaviours that are most frequently in that sort of 9% that thrive?
Yeah, there's three business behaviours that came out that differentiated and predicted the companies that are part of that 9 or 10% of firms that thrive. So firstly, efficiency. So every company obviously needs to engage in cash flow and cash protection measures right now. But the 9% go further than that and work on operational efficiency. So they make themselves fitter. They don't just focus on reducing costs, so that when the recovery comes, they're better positioned to make use of that. And key to driving that efficiency is to create an environment where people have clarity about what is expected of them and feel a strong sense of accountability and ownership. The second point I would say is evolution. So it's all about evolving products and services or distribution and delivery channels. This is not necessarily innovation. It may involve innovation, but it doesn't have to be. It's more about investing in future growth, in particular output side investments. So products and marketing seems to be highly related to increased profit and market share increases during the recovery. And clarity and psychological safety are going to be essential to create the conditions for that evolution, so that people feel comfortable raising, sharing ideas, sharing perspectives, and they feel that sense of safety to bring that to the table. Yeah. And the third point I would say is, decentralized businesses do better in recovery because they're closer to the market face and more responsive to customer needs. But interestingly, decentralization will only work if people feel empowered. So if people feel that they can take the initiative and make use of the decentralization, that's the winning combination. And you can really increase that empowerment in two ways. You could do either structural empowerment, which is about changing something about someone's environment or skill base, whether that's, flatter structures or training and development. Or there's the psychological empowerment. You can change people's attitudes, their approach and mindset, so that people feel allowed and enabled to take the initiative. What's important is not so much what you do, but what people experience and believe. So it's like, for example, companies can introduce flexible working policies, but if people perceive them to be career limiting, if they take up the offer, then all the work that's gone into creating the policy is irrelevant and redundant. And what one of the interesting things I would say about those three areas I've talked about, so, the driving efficiency, evolution and decentralization and empowerment. The important thing is that those 9 or 10% of firms did all those three things. So it's not enough to do just one. It's about doing the combination of all those three things that have differentiated companies that have thrived up the other side of various crises in the past.
Well, so it's a real balance in terms of what you're doing and how you're putting it into action as well.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much for all of that. That was so much interesting stuff, actually. Thank you also to everyone that's listening and downloading this week's edition. If you have any questions for either me or Susanna, please do not hesitate to email me on se@elliotscotthr.com. And please join us next week for the final installment in this COVID-19 series. Thanks ever so much, everyone. Thanks, Susanna.
Thank you.